Chapter 57. For some inexplicable reason, the Ocean Venturer refused to die. Perhaps it was the heavy double hull, especially designed for ramming through ice, that saved the ship. Many of the outer plates were smashed, the seams split, and the keel twisted. The damage was extensive and severe, but still the ship survived. Pitt had watched the derrick go over. He stared numbly through the shattered windows of the control room, released his grip on a doorway, and staggered uncontrollably into Hoker's console, his sense of balance telling him what his eyes refused. The deck was tilting at an angle of 30 degrees. His first thought was the grim appreciation that the ship was mortally hurt. Hard on the heels of that came the sickening realization of what the frightful blast must have done to the divers on the wreck. He shook off the fog and the dull ache that tried to creep back into his mind. He logically categorized the steps to be taken. Then he went into action. He grabbed the phone and rang up the chief engineer. Nearly a minute crawled by before an impersonal voice replied in dazed shock. "Engine room. Metz, is that you?" "You'll have to speak louder. I can't hear." It dawned on Pitt that to the men on the lower decks and in the engine room, the roar and concussion must have been ear-shattering. He shouted into the mouthpiece. "Metz, this is Pitt." "Okay, that's better," Metz replied in a metallic monotone. "What in hell is going on?" "My best guess, my only guess, is an explosion from below." "Damn, I thought the Canadians stuck a torpedo in us." "Report on damage." "It's like working under 100 running faucets down here. Water is gushing in everywhere. I doubt if the pumps have the capability to handle it. That's all I can tell you until I sound the hull." "What about injuries?" "We were catapulted around like drunken gymnasts. I think Jackson has a broken knee and Gilmore a skull fracture. Beyond that, a few battered eardrums and a gang of bruises." "Come back to me every 5 minutes," Pitt ordered, "and whatever you do, keep the generators turning." "I don't have to be reminded. If they go, we go." "You got the idea." Pitt crammed the phone in its receiver and looked worriedly at Heidi. Gunn was kneeling over her, cradling her head in his arms. She lay crumpled against the chart table, barely conscious, staring through vacant eyes at her left leg. It lay at a queer angle. "Funny," she whispered. "It doesn't hurt a bit." The pain would come, thought Pitt. Already her face was flower-white from shock. He took her hand. "Just lie still until we can get a stretcher." He wanted to say more, to comfort her, but there was no time. Reluctantly, he turned away at the anguished interruption of Hoker's voice. "The board is out." Hoker was fighting to recover, picking his fallen chair off the deck, staring dumbly at his darkened console panel and monitors. "Then fix the damn thing," Pitt rapped out. "We've got to know what happened to the underwater crew." He took a headset and patched himself into all the stations of the Ocean Venturer. On and below decks, the scientists and engineers of Pneuma began pulling their senses together and toiling like madmen to save their ship. The more seriously injured were carried to the hospital bay, where they soon overfilled the facilities and were placed in rows outside in the hallway. Those who did not have critical jobs labored to tear aside the wreckage of the derrick or seal the cracks in the hull as they stood in waist-high frigid water. A team of divers was hurriedly assembled to go below. The messages kept pouring in as Pitt directed the recovery. A still bewildered radio operator turned to him. "Just in from the captain of the Phoenix. He wishes to know if we need assistance." "Hell yes, we need assistance," Pitt shouted. "Request he bring his ship alongside. We need every available pump he's got and all the damage control men he can spare." He broke off and dabbed a damp towel on his forehead, waiting impatiently for the answer. "The message is, hold the fort," said the radio operator excitedly. "We will tie up on your starboard side." Then, a few seconds later, "Commander Weeks on the Huron asks if we're abandoning ship." "He'd like that," Pitt growled. "It would solve all his problems." "Standing by for an answer." "Tell him we'll abandon ship when we can step off on the bottom. Then repeat the request for men and pumping equipment." "Pitt?" Metz's voice broke in over the headset. "Go ahead." "Looks like the stern took the brunt of the blast. From midships forward, the hull is tight and dry. From there back, it's got more cracks than a jigsaw puzzle. I'm afraid we've had it." How long can you keep us afloat? At the rate the water's rising, it should reach and short the generators in 20 or 25 minutes. Then we lose the pumps. After that, maybe 10 minutes. Help is on the way. Open the side loading doors so the damage control men and pumping equipment can be transferred from the naval vessels. They'd better hustle or we won't be around to throw a welcome party. The radio operator gestured, and Pitt made his way toward him across the slanting deck. I've re-established contact with Sappho 1, he said. I'll tie you in on the phone. Sappho 1, this is Pitt. Please reply.
This is Klinger on Sappho 1, or what's left of us.
What is your condition?
We're lying about 150 meters southeast of the wreck with our bow buried in the mud. The hull stood up to the concussion. It was like sitting inside a clanging bell. But one of the viewports cracked and we're taking on water.
Are your life support systems functioning?
Roger, they should keep us healthy for a while yet. The problem is we'll drown a good 15 hours before our oxygen supply goes.
Can you make a free ascent?
I might, replied Klinger. I only lost a tooth from the jolt. Marv Powers, though, is in a bad way. Both his arms are busted, and he took a bad crack on the head. He'd never make it to the surface.
Pitt closed his eyes for a moment. He did not relish playing God with men's lives, designating priorities over who was saved first or last. When he looked up again, he had made his decision.
You'll have to hold on for a while, Klinger. We'll get to you just as soon as we can. Keep me posted every 10 minutes.
Pitt stepped out on the bridge wing and peered down. Four divers were disappearing over the side.
I have a picture, said Hooker in triumph as one of the video monitors brightened into life.
The monitor showed a view of the excavation pit as seen from the upper promenade deck. The support columns were collapsed and the decks below had fallen inward. There was no sign of the two gym suits or the saturation divers. The cold, abstract eye of the camera saw only a crater ringed with grotesquely distorted steel. But to Pitt, it was as though he was staring into an open grave.
God help them, Hooker muttered under his breath. They must all be dead.